I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers.
We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest. How are you doing, dear?
I'm okay. I almost totally said the wrong intro.
What did you think you were going to say almost?
Don't know if I was actually going to say this is SeaQuest or if this is Sex Archie.
Both something with an S.
Both were in my mouth. And
SeaQuest is not in my mouth. It's in my heart.
It's in my heart. I bleed the sea.
Well, that sounds like an issue we should get looked at.
It's
but first,
really salty. My sodium levels are way high.
Oh. At least it's not cholesterol. So I have an announcement at the start.
Yeah?
Since our last episode, we have a Blue Sky account. We're on the Bisky.
Yeah.
So go look up Whiskers. You know how it is. WSKRS on Blue Sky. And you're going to see an account. And it is full of some light cast profiles.
Mm-hmm.
Some things that the viewers of 1993 might recognize our main cast in. And some things they all went on to do since.
Yeah.
And these have been very career focused, right? Exclusively roles, not their personal lives.
Yes.
Although, while doing the research, I find out about their personal lives.
Yeah?
So I would like to ask you, dear.
Yes?
Which member of the main cast of SeaQuest DSV Season 1 had a romantic sexual relationship with someone who went on to be a head of state?
What?
Yes. I'll narrow it down. They went on to become the prime minister of their nation.
What?
Yes.
I don't know at all.
Give me a guess. I'm not moving on without a guess.
Crocker.
Incorrect. Stephanie Beecham, Ms. Kristen Westphalen, had a wild and torrid love affair in the 1980s with star cricketer Imran Khan. Here he is in those days.
Okay.
Look at that handsome hunk of cricket meat.
I mean, that's a better picture. The first one he showed me, actually, I was like, that's not handsome.
He is better known these days as the as a recent prime minister of Pakistan.
Oh, okay.
From 2018 to 2022.
Okay.
He founded a major political party that over the decades put him into the prime ministership.
Dang. You just don't think about that. Like, that's like real life You've Got Mail. Like, oh, he ran Spain.
He ran it. The country.
Like, you're just like, wait, what? Tell me about your exes. Well,
when they were together, he was just a world-famous cricket player, winning world tournaments.
But now.
Prime Minister.
Yeah.
She was also born over half deaf.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Fully deaf in one ear, like 80% hearing in the other.
Oh.
And has done a lot of advocacy for spreading sign language beyond the deaf community.
Mm-hmm. Very important. I agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk about that today.
No, yeah, because she's like not in this episode.
Yeah, we're not even
going to
talk about Westphalen today.
She's not in this episode. We do not even see her once, which is funny because they totally could have worked her in.
Yes.
Several times, I think.
But they did not. In episode 11, Sea West, written by John J. Sackmar and Carrie Lenich. Those are the writers of Give Me Liberté and Treasures of the Tonga Trench.
Those are better episodes.
This is directed by Gabrielle Beaumont. She directed on L.A. Law, on Hill Street Blues. She directed 7 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, making her the first woman to ever direct a Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
Her first episode of TNG was Booby Trap. The first appearance of hologram Leah Brahms, Geordi's computer girlfriend.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
I love that episode.
Yeah. I was dreading watching this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. You have been for a long
time.
I
have not wanted to watch this episode. I skipped this episode in
this
every
episode
rewatch.
Is smack in the middle of ones we've been excited to talk about.
Yeah.
The last two Whiskers, you've gotten here, you know. We were so excited to talk about those two. we have two coming up next that I think are going to be really interesting. Yes. And then this one is just kind of boring.
Yeah.
They ain't all winners. They're just not all winners.
We're going to make this a fun episode to listen to, but let me tell you, watching it, meh.
So we begin with some lovely B-roll of the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, which is, I mean, okay, so it's setting up the, like, general location we're in, which is, like,
the New Auckland Confederation?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But we also spend no other time about fish or coral in this entire episode, so...
No, no.
Sure! So what we do get with this starting is a shuttle leaving the SeaQuest and heading off to a mining community.
The establishing shot, the CG creation of the exterior of this mining complex, I think is great. I love the look of this place.
Yeah, it's pretty good. They got a sign out there that tells you that it's a Broken Ridge, and it's one of, it's the way it's kind of, the sign is kind of thrown in a rock or whatever on the seafloor. Okay, I love the way it's kind of thrown there though, because it very much like screams the like rickety old wood sign outside the like Wild West town.
Yeah.
But from the undersea perspective.
From the title to points of design like that, to the costumes especially, this episode wants you to think of Westerns, be in a Western mode. This is about claim jumpers and rustlers.
And gold.
And it's about gold.
And the thickest Australian accents you will ever hear. I was just waiting for Crocodile Dundee to, like, pop out.
Crocodile Dundee,
Yeah. Oh, thank God none of them attempted to, like, to put on an accent and locals. Blend in. Okay, maybe actually that should have happened. That would have been amazing if Crocker or, like, Krieg were like, hey, yeah. Okay. But so the shuttle's going, and we got Crocker, we got Krieg, we got Ford, and we got Bridger on this boat. Because they have gotten a distress signal from the area, and are going to check it out.
Because everything looks fine, you know? It's not crumbling, it's not on fire for once.
Yeah. As they are driving there, though, Ford and Krieg are having a little conversation, though, where, like, Krieg's like, so... what do you do if there's a cave-in when you're mining? And Ford's like, you die. Oh, okay. Like, what do you think happens, Krieg?
What happens on land when there's a cave-in?
You most likely you're gonna die, but it's especially bad if you're underwater, because guess what? Probably the water's gonna rush in and you'll drown.
Yeah. So they make it. They get out, and this looks like a thriving frontier-styled town.
In a cave.
Inside a cave. Yeah. There's this tiny little three-wheel golf cart car with babes in it. I love this tiny car.
You never see this damn car again.
It's so cute.
This car is in this scene alone and never seen again. And it's an adult version of, like, a Power Wheels car.
Yeah.
But kind of shaped like a computer mouse.
If I were on this set and I needed to go to, like, the other soundstage, I'd want to take this tiny car.
Yeah.
That would be going in style.
Yeah, it definitely goes beep beep.
It so beep, goes beep beep.
Beep beep. Yeah, so they're there and they're like, okay, let's check this place out. You know, it doesn't really look like anyone's in distress. Things look okay. They go to the trailer, because we got a lot of trailers down here.
They brought... as an office.
And, like, people's homes.
They brought a trailer with wheels to the underwater cave.
Well, it needs wheels, because how else are you going to get it off the shuttle? Because it needs to have wheels. And
you
I guess
what?
You use the
you
little,
got me. You
the
got
little
me.
Beep beep car to pull it.
And the little beep beep car does not have the horsepower. It needs more torque. You need an Auga for
you
that.
You are underestimating the beep beep.
I'm just trying to be realistic.
I think it's got a lot of horsepower under there. Four-wheel drive.
It's got hamster power under there. It's a little beep beep.
Beep beep. There's a sign up that no one's there, and that's the person they wanted to talk to who seemed to be in charge. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, let's take a look around.
And they find the bar, the big cave bar that has a digital sign showing the specials.
And more trailers.
They're all blank. It's a thing. The pool table is round. They have round billiards.
And the music stops and everyone looks at them for like 3 seconds and you're like, oh, they're fucked. But then the music starts back up because no one gives a shit.
Yes. Yes.
And Bridger goes to the bar asking, you know, they're looking for Mr. Cobb, the guy who's supposed to be at the office trailer. And the bartender's like, haven't seen him. It's early for lunch. But you know what? It's not early for, it's never too early for a drink. I can help you there. And he pulls out a tray.
Yes, a shiny little tray.
With the tiny little bottles of alcohol.
The little airplane size bottles. The little
airplane bottles of alcohol.
Yes.
And I'm just like, that is an awful choice. Like, I'm sorry. People are having to bring you this alcohol to your mining community. Why are they bringing such tiny bottles that then you're going to have to, like, recycle?
You can put full-size bottles inside the trailers that seem to be the main constituent of your cargo loads.
In a scene later, this bar does have full-size bottles of alcohol.
Well, maybe this is an insult to Captain Bridger
and like, the UEO. Oh, you look like a lightweight. You only get the baby bottles.
We don't want your kind around here, so take the hint.
So have this tiny bottle of Jägermeister.
So you'll be done quicker and you leave.
So Krieg wastes no time. Mm-hmm. He is made attempting to make friends with two ladies and pouring them some champagne and being like, hey, what do you know about a distress signal?
And he finds that the ennui of the postmodern condition is a kind of distress signal all its own.
Yes. Yeah. Mwah. and so he also learns more about, like, why they're there and that they're, you know, entertainers. And he's like, oh, well, what brought you here? And he's like, they're like, we're not very good. That's why we're here. They'll hire anyone.
They're kinda desperate.
Kind of suck.
The one treats it like stand-ups talking about paying their dues at open mics. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're free to be bad here. It's safe. And then you can, you know, be a good singer later.
And the other's like, no, we suck.
We're just bad at this.
Secretly implying, we probably get paid more for other stuff. Yeah. So Crocker also decides to try to go make friends and just ask some dudes playing poker if they know about a distress signal. And the guy's like, oh yeah, I'm so distressed right now in my game. Oh wait, I'm not. Give me your money, everyone. It's so much. So then, this dude who's been, like, lingering throughout all of these scenes, like, watching them, sending his kid back home, sitting close, just walks right up to Ford and punches him in the face.
Says, I heard what you said about my wife, and lays him out. And, like, Commander Ford would only talk about someone's wife in strict technical language.
Yes.
He would walk up to you and say, hey, buddy, your wife is 165 centimeters tall. What are you going to do about it? I guess so.
And so this guy is beating up on Ford and wrestling with him. And just before he gets pulled off, he whispers in Ford's ear, help us. Don't leave us here. We need help.
There is something so tragic and so meaningful about recognizing the only way for two men to really be close is through the mediation of violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this is a really deep episode.
It's the only way for a man to ask for help.
It's approximately 1,492 feet deep, according to that sign.
So as this dude is pulled off Ford, a rifle is now in Ford's face. And guess what? It's Cobbs, the dude they were looking for.
Yes.
And he is the most Australian of Australian, aside from the, like, recorded voice when you dock.
Except he's really not. Frank Cobb is played by English actor David McCallum.
Yeah, yeah. I never said it was real. I'm just saying he's trying to be.
You can hear it at the edges every once in a while that he's a fancy stage-trained English boy.
Yeah, he's trying so hard, though. So hard.
he is famed for the titular role Steel in Sapphire and Steel. He was Ilya Kuryakin in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He was in films such as The Great Escape and The Greatest Story Ever Told, and other things that don't have great in the name. Recently, up until the end of his life, he played the fussy English medical examiner on 20 seasons of NCIS.
Oh my god.
Yes!
That's so long. I recently saw, like, a clip from, like Special Victims Unit, like, and, like, I didn't realize that, like, some of the cast members were, like, it's still, like, the same cast members.
Yes!
And I was suddenly like, oh my god, they're so old. Because I haven't, like, watched that in years and years and years.
It is amazing that their characters have not retired.
Right?
Like, at this point, you gotta cash out that pension and stop chasing all the sex weirdos, please.
Right? I was just like, wait, what? I felt so old suddenly. So I was like, you've been on air since I was a child.
Not as old as Munchfields, believe me.
Then we get the opening.
Yes!
Now, I would like to take a moment, though, to talk about the attire of, like, almost all of our miners.
Sure.
These men look like they're all going fishing.
There's a lot of pocketed vests, sure.
A lot of pocketed vests. A lot of
flannel.
Hats with brims, keeping the sun out of their eyes.
In their underground, underwater mining. Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they turn the lamps up real high sometimes.
That's why everyone's so tan.
Mm, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So when we come back, Cobbs is handcuffing Mr. Puncher, who we find out's name is Lenny.
Yes. Lenny Sutter here is played by David Morse. You might recognize him from films such as The Rock, The Hurt Locker, The Green Mile, or as George Washington in HBO's John Adams miniseries.
I haven't watched that.
Well, speaking of HBO, he was Rachel McAdams' long hair guru dad in the second season of True Detective.
I'm going to have to Google this because I don't like remember this at all.
We watched that just a couple months ago.
Do I remember him? What he looks like? What actually happened in that season? No, not really.
I think David Morse looks like Neil McDonough a lot.
Yes. I always forget his name, and then when I see who he is, I'm like, oh yes, him.
Neil McDonough is one of my favorite actor weirdos.
Yes. Yeah.
He could have had a career two or three times as big as he did, but he refuses to kiss anyone in a role.
Yes, that's right.
Because he will not... He thinks of it as cheating on his wife to do his fucking job as an actor.
I want to know what his wife thinks. Like, is his wife just like, dude, go kiss people. It's fine. Make us money. I don't care. Or is she like, don't kiss people.
The ravenous of residuals won't last forever, Neil. Go get a job. And that's why he plays so many villains, because villains don't get love interest nearly as much.
I want to know her side of this, though. I'm very curious. Would you feel it's cheating?
No.
No, because there's nothing to it. There you go, Neil. There's your idea.
Now, if this conversation does inspire you to go, like, line up 8 auditions this month, I might rethink some things. I might look at Neil's opinion a little more closely.
It's okay. The, like, last time I had to, like, kiss someone for a theater thing, I really hated it. I hated kissing that dude so much. I despised it. I didn't like him. I didn't want to. I was like, you know, we don't have to practice this part at all. We'll just, like, be spontaneous.
We'll just wing it. It's
yeah,
fine.
We'll wing it. It'll be totally okay.
So Cobb is talking to Bridger and pals, and he's trying to, like, assuage them that it's good, it's fine, nothing to worry about here, you know? I can't explain anything about that signal because we're all hunky-dory kumbaya. We love it here.
We're like a family.
Aren't
and you know
we,
what?
Lenny?
You know what? Anytime someone in a work environment says we're like a family, that is fucking bullshit. Run like hell. Arrest everyone. Shit's bad.
And if that guy also says, hey, don't worry, Lenny, I sent some of my boys around your house to check on your wife and kids so that they also know how good family we are.
Yeah, that's also another red flag right there.
It's a red flag big enough that Krieg mentions it in the next scene, and he's not the most observant man.
He's like, this seems really bad. This seems like an issue. So Cobb is trying to usher them out, mm-hmm. then tries to take this whole thing of, like, you know, this seems very suspicious that the UEO is suddenly here when you have, like, no jurisdiction. Are you just trying to, like, swoop in and, like, steal our gold?
He mentions, like, them trying to tax their claims, so the UEO can levy taxes on mining operations?
I'm gonna go with they can't, but this dude is... he's probably got a lot of conspiracy theories out there.
Sure, sure.
Probably like, you're not going to tread on our cave.
The UEO just keeps sounding more and more like the government every episode.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It does become more and more of the government. Trying to shuffle him out, and Bridger's like, mm-hmm, oh, well, mm-hmm. I'm very sorry you feel this way, but, like, we still have to find that signal. But we are going to leave.
We'll go find it on our boat, I guess.
As they're heading out, this is when Krieg is like, so did we just get told to get lost by sundown?
Mm-hmm.
This seems really bad, guys. And Bridger's like, yeah, but we're not going to talk about this here. We're going to talk about this on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they are in a cave. If you say something, it's amplified
echo,
three
echo,
times.
Echo. So they get on the shuttle and they all head out. Ford is talking with Bridger and very much, you know, like, we have to go back. That guy was definitely, you know, asking for help as he punched me in the face.
Yes.
And said, like, hey, I need help. Like, I'm not just, like, making this up. He actually asked me for help.
Not like in the Lucas way where when he picks a fight, it's a cry for help. It's very, very,
very
literal.
Literal. This guy said, help us. Not hug me and pretend to be my papa.
What if he did? What if this grown man punches you across the jaw over a pool table and he leans in and whispers, be my papa.
Be my papa.
I need a papa.
I need a hug. My papa's dead. Hug me.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
Bridger is like, well, we do need to go back, but we can't. This is open territory. We, like, can't go back without, like, an invitation or a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are interrupted by a reason, which is a little dog barking.
Yeah, there's this...
bark, bark, bark!
There's this little noise, and Ford picks up one of the floor grates in the shuttle, and out pops this little dog with stubby little legs.
Yeah.
It's like some sort of terrier dachshund mix, and I love him.
It's a little terrier.
I love him, stubby little legos.
He's got a little note attached to his collar that's written in crayon saying, you know, you please come back, help us. I don't want them to hurt my daddy.
It was written by Lenny. He's
be my daddy.
Be my daddy.
Be my daddy. Which way we've written it? That could have many meanings.
Well, Ford's reading the note, so no, it only has the one meaning.
Ford doesn't know
he
how
doesn't
to
get
read it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back on the Sequest. Lucas is giving a presentation on mining.
Lucas, the geologist, yes.
Here are all the facts about undersea mining.
We had a geologist a couple weeks back. He used to be a ghost guy, sure.
Yeah, he ain't here for this one. He's wherever Westphalen is. Also not here for this one.
This could have been the one Westphalen scene. Instead, it's the one Lucas scene.
I was like...
of one and a half,
well,
Lucas
no,
scenes.
I thought she could have been around to, like, I don't know, make sure Ford isn't, like, concussed.
Oh, doing doctor things
or,
instead
yeah,
of science
or,
things.
Yeah,
yeah,
actually,
yeah.
Later things, too, in this episode, doing doctor things.
No.
But no, no. Well, here's the thing, is Lucas had to do a special project.
Mm-hmm.
It was time for his extra credit. Even though he's, like, graduated from college with multiple degrees, they still make him do homework.
Yes, but all of his degrees are in computer things, and as we know, the requirement to be in the Sequest science crew is broad multidisciplinarity.
Oh, okay, so he's working on another degree.
He has to be a geologist if he wants to keep his room.
Okay. And so, yeah, we're learning about how, like, undersea mining started happening, and that there's a whole lot of mining camps along the coast of Australia, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ortiz also has the whiskers out, keeping an eye on things.
While O'Neill is listening to all communications, that this segues very smoothly, very cleanly into a debate of, okay, how do we find out what's going on?
And Ford's like, we should just go back and ask questions.
Yeah!
We should ask the guy who punched me in the face what's going on.
Why'd he do that?
And they're like, well, we can't just, like, go back. And so Krieg is like, hey, I talked to my buddy Murray.
Yeah!
And Murray's like, there are always people coming in and out of there. We got comedians, we got singers, we got entertainers.
You thought Murray was just a special new gem wholesaler? No, he also books gigs. Everyone wears so many hats.
Murray does it all. I'm not surprised Murray's involved with this. You know why? Because the one thing that is unsaid in everything to do with all the people coming to this mining community, you know, they talk about how, like, oh, well, ladies are looking for husbands. There's some other things that are happening in these people that are coming there, but it's a children's family show. We can't say it. And obviously Murray is dealing in this stuff.
The ladies are looking for husbands, but what are the men looking for? And that's where Murray comes in.
Murray's a pimp. Because he also says, yeah, Murray says they'll pay double for female entertainers or something.
Mm-hmm.
So Bridger's like, oh, okay, like, you know, Krieg, you're a comedian. Should we send you in there?
And he passes it off very flattered. Well, you know, I do sort of an extemporaneous thing. I don't have a tight five prepared.
And so, like, oh, how are we going to send someone in there? And Hitchcock's like, I can go.
Well,
I can be bad.
Yes, her quote is just, I can be bad.
I
out
can
of
be
nowhere.
Bad.
Because, again, they're talking about how they don't care if the acts are any good.
And they all look at her, and she's like, what? I can sing. I can hold my own. Yeah.
And this moment is what, like, you know what ties all three Sackmar and Leonard scripts together?
Krieg and Hitchcock.
They're very interested in the post-divorce relationship here.
Yeah, because Krieg is like, Katie, you sing in the shower. And she's like, oh, so you want me to shower for them too? As everyone's just sitting at this table looking at them like, oh.
Well, for that, they'll pay triple. So, yeah, I guess.
And so Bridger's like,
just put it in the petty cash fund, yeah.
Bridger not wanting to get the wrath of Hitchcock is like, call your friend Murray and book her. And we're going to do this. Also, it's the best plan.
There is immediate tension because, you know, Krieg's been in there. He doesn't know the shape of it, but he knows it's a dangerous place.
Yes.
And Hitchcock is very realistically like, well, there's a job, I'm capable of it, and you don't get to tell me what to do.
Yes.
We had lawyers involved to make that point.
Also, as the one woman at that table talking about all the women going to this mining community.
I bet Wes Phelan could juggle. I bet she's a secret juggler.
She will be the silver fox.
She's doing some like Mooney the Magnificent shit out there.
Yeah, I would love that, okay? She goes out there, everyone's, like, ready for the entertainment, and she just starts whistling at them.
She looks out at all the men and says, I got one question for you boys. Who wants to be prime minister one day?
These lips can make it happen. So back on the mining community, this random child keeps running around, let me tell ya.
Where is the school in this place? Why did they bring a child to Broken Ridge? There's a reason this kid only writes in crayon.
And runs around alone all the time.
All the time. Unsupervised child.
But we see a whole bunch of women getting off a shuttle, including Hitchcock, and oh my god, the outfits everyone is
shoulder
wearing.
Shoulder pads and hats, big hats and bigger shoulder pads.
We have to talk about Hitchcock's outfit.
Yeah.
She has the most 1993 little red mini dress on with bell sleeves.
Oh, yes.
With a black vest that inside has a flower print in the same color as the dress. She also has a shawl on.
Well, it gets chilly in those transport pods.
And, like, a blossom hat.
Yes, yes. This
the velvet, like, blossom hat with the flowers that all matches.
This hat fell off the truck on the way out of the blossom set, yes.
Yes, or, like, the Full House set. Mary-Kate and Ashley definitely wore this when they were, like, three.
Did Blossom film on the Universal lot? It could be the exact same hat.
The outfits these women are wearing, there are so many that are, like, shoulder pad business suit. Mm-hmm. And, like, weird-ass shit that you're kind of like, why are you wearing that? And then she's got this, which is very cutesy, but also, like, I don't know, screams like high school girl. Very My So-Called Life.
Sure, sure. Yes. Yes.
Very Angela Chase. Okay? Maybe a little less grunge, but there. She would be the crystal girl.
She would shop
at the dragon store at the mall.
Did you watch My So-Called Life then?
I love My So-Called Life.
Is that why you like Wilson Cruz so much as medical officer Hugh Culver
it's
in Discovery?
It's why I lost my shit when I first saw him on the show. Okay, I was like, oh okay. My god, it's him! Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we had this conversation.
We did?
Yeah, I told you. Because okay. I was like, oh my god, oh my god. And you thought it was because he was in Rent. And yes. I was like, well, yeah, that's cool too. But like, this is My So-Called Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes, there's the parade of the entertaining ladies.
Yes.
And Hitchcock Undercover is among them.
And so immediately...
We never see another one of these ladies the rest of the episode.
No, we don't.
No.
They walk on past.
I want to know which one of them has a ventriloquist dummy.
It's the one that is in the suit because she's carrying, like, a case.
Oh, that's her puppets.
Yeah, her puppets are in there. It's like a hard-sided case. Uh-huh. These women also come with, like, no fucking luggage. No. They all have, like, one tiny-ass piece of luggage.
They're good. They're here for a good time, not a long time, you know?
They're not going to need their clothes, apparently.
That's what the men are hoping for. So,
so Cobbs, fucking creeper.
Yes!
Fucking creeper. Because he immediately goes up to her and is like, welcome to Broken Ridge, ma'am. Can I help you with your bag?
So he lays down some implications.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes some offers, and now we get in the clearest statement, yes, there is an element of Broken Ridge life where there are a bunch of lonely miners who've dug up quite a bit of gold. And there are women who are desperate enough to marry a rich man that they don't care if there are awful, rough rich men currently living in the frontier.
Yes.
This is the plot of Mud's Women, the first season Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
Except that one's fun to watch.
Yeah. So, he's just hitting on her a lot and throwing gold on the table and...
It's a lot of gold.
Her. I mean, it is a lot of gold. But...
Yeah. Hitchcock is in the tense position of not wanting to make the local armed strongman angry at her,
yeah,
or suspicious of her, or have anything to do with him. There's no right answers in this conversation.
No, and so she has to shut him down and be like, oh, well, I didn't come here to get married. He's like, oh, so you're an entertainer. Well, how about you entertain me?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm gonna go now. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go find my room. I haven't found my room yet because you stopped me immediately. So when she leaves, she goes up to the small child that we've seen running around across scenes like every single time we're in this mine.
And she engages in some subtle spycraft with the unsupervised child.
Yes, like, oh, you know, my friends found a dog, and it was a really nice dog, and I'd be so sad if I lost my dog. Do you know anyone who lost a dog? And the kid's like, his name is Banjo! And so, back on the boat, we are in Lucas's room, and
yes.
Banjo is barking at Darwin through the window.
Yes!
And it's cute!
Dogs and dolphins love each other. TikTok
so
taught
cute.
Me this.
It's so
it's
cute.
Real.
It's adorable! and of course, we have Lucas doing research.
Sure.
Illegal research.
And he found some background on Lenny here. Lenny and his father were just quick on the uptake and bought mining rights to this patch of land as soon as they opened up.
Yep.
And before anyone knew it had gold. So yeah, he gambled, they struck it rich. He owns the claim. Everything in there is technically his.
Yes.
Except that's not how it's really working when we get down on the ground, now is it?
No. So we get the story, though, because a little child has introduced Hitchcock to his parents, mm-hmm. which is Lenny Sutter and his wife. And she is getting filled in by them about how everything's going. That mm-hmm. Cobb was a hired hand until he, you know, corrupted everyone, basically, and brought him over to his side that, like, they could get more money if he was in charge.
So while Lenny is the on-paper owner, and they need his signature to sell anything that comes out of here, mm-hmm. Cobb and his armed goons run the place day to day and are basically harassing the Sutters and keeping them under house arrest yes. for those signatures.
Yes, and there is a clause that basically, like, they are tied to all of this for, like, 5 years.
Yes.
This whole thing, and, like, they're coming up on 5 years, which has them worried, like, they're going to be killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as they aren't necessary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who knows what might happen.
Yeah.
And you know what could happen? You could leave. You could call a lawyer. You can leave and then call a lawyer.
Here's the thing, though, is that they can't leave. They're under, like, house arrest.
Sure.
It comes up later, too, where they even say, like, Cobb will not let us go to a shuttle bay. Mm-hmm. Like, we cannot leave.
And I guess the closest thing they could get to a lawyer is Krieg and Hitchcock?
I mean, okay, so...
I bet Murray knows a guy.
Thing is, it seems like with this house arrest, they can't communicate with anyone. The mm-hmm, closest mm-hmm. he could do was setting off a distress signal to get someone to come there. They don't have communication with the outside world.
Why isn't Lucas and Bridger immediately calling a lawyer with their half of the information?
I don't know. I mean, they're not having this conversation with Hitchcock that is heavy, and so they only know some things, but still, they're putting it together. So here, after she's done talking with them,
right.
she pulls out her communication device, and yes. she goes to radio them. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she's like, hey, can you take me to somewhere where this will work? Which is implying that she has not been in touch with them yet.
Right.
She has not been communicating with them at all. It isn't until he leads her into the mine to go mm-hmm, radio mm-hmm. that she finally can talk with them. So at this point, they are getting information.
So at this point, Bridger should call a lawyer.
At this point, he should. But everything before then, they hadn't been in communication.
Okay.
Though I do want to know why somehow going farther into the mine means the radio works.
It's in and up. I guess.
In and up, in to the wall.
I guess.
Maybe, I guess. It's a little confusing that you have to go where you need a hard hat to get your radio to work.
That's where we keep the repeater. That's where it is. Mm. It's around the corner there.
Okay.
Tap in, Mr. Robot.
Yeah. So Lenny takes her in there, and he's like, you know, keeping an eye out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's like around the corner, and guess who appears? It's Cobbs.
This is my real problem with the Sutter plot. And, like, if they can't sell the gold without you, you own the gold. He who can destroy a thing controls a thing, Lenny.
What's he gonna do?
Not sell the gold.
But they're threatening his family.
I think that they are setting this guy up to be a spineless dweeb, but he is not being played like a spineless dweeb.
Eh.
The way he has acted and the actor they cast seem like this upstanding, noble guy who would have years ago said, nah, try it, bet you won't. And then things shake out totally differently before they get to this point.
Not if someone's holding a gun to your family's head.
I guess. I just don't buy it. I think he has so much more leverage than he thinks he does, and you never see him try to use it. You never hear him talk about when he did try to lose it, and that's why his wife only has 9 fingers or something.
They like guns. They're not, they don't chop fingers off. They just hold guns to children's heads.
Well, Cobb is smart enough to know if as soon as you kill the hostage, you don't have a hostage. You gotta go bit by bit.
Why do you think there are no other children?
It was a family of five when this all started.
They're just been
okay.
Popping off okay. One kid at a time. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, there we go. You fixed it. This is now the best episode in all of Sequest.
No, it's not. I hate this episode so much. I am just, though, like, I can see what they're going for.
Sure, sure. So can I. I just don't think they're getting there.
Cobbs is all like, oh, I saw you had company. You had company with the lady who I want to get in her pants, basically.
And he's like, well, yeah, she likes kids. Weird thing to say. So she followed our kid home and we had dinner and we talked, you know, about the kid. And he's being very tight-lipped. Yes. With this insane story of a traveling lounge singer who's just like, you know, my favorite thing in the world, 11-year-olds.
That kid's not 11. So bad at knowing children's ages.
How old is this child?
He's like 8.
Okay, that's the same thing.
No, it's not! That's the same thing! Cobbs throws himself at Lenny. There's, you know, a lot of punching and beating up and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then Hitchcock comes out of the cave and smacks Cobbs over the head with a shovel.
Well, you say smacks. That's not how I would describe this.
Bonk.
It's a very gentle bonk. It looked like they were lining up the shot, and then they didn't do a real take after, like, getting the framing right.
I love how the camera is, like, on his face, and you, like, see his, like, eyes, like, do a funky little roll around. It's so comical.
My favorite thing in this scene is that Cobb is so certain Hitchcock is not who she says she is, because most women want to marry him immediately. She must be some kind of spy.
Then why aren't you married? If they all want to marry you, why aren't you married? Back on the Sequest, one of the Whiskers and Darwin are checking out Shaft 7.
And Darwin comes back and he reports like hidden caves or something.
Closed cave.
And they figure, oh, he must have found a mining shaft. There's mining shafts here at the mining colony.
And they're labeled with numbers.
Like, what are you talking about?
We can literally see on the Whisker.
I'm looking at them.
There is a dock.
Yes. So they found this secret information that is clear and plain for all to see, and now this is their plan. They're going to go in one of the many back doors that are used for dumping slag and waste out the window.
Mm-hmm. Great idea. I do like Krieg, like, thanking Darwin, though.
Yes.
It's cute. He's like, oh, thank you, buddy.
I don't think Krieg's had a Darwin moment before this point, has he? Like, nothing comes to mind. Darwin is very big into
He got splashed once or something.
Maybe. But, like, Darwin is so strongly connected to the fake family. And he had a very special day with O'Neill.
Yeah.
And everyone else is just kind of not a Darwin guy.
Not now. But everyone cares.
Yeah.
I could totally, like, I feel like they had a missed opportunity of, like, Krieg trying to bribe Darwin into doing crime for him.
Yeah.
Like, smuggling shit or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just hiding some contraband in a tube for, like, yeah. I'll be back for it in half an hour.
Or, like, Darwin, you're gonna go out there and, like, get that, like, fish that I can, like, sell for $100,000 or something.
That,
like,
is one expensive thing.
I need you to bring it back in your mouth. What is this fish made of? I don't know.
What kind of fish is the $100,000 fish?
Well, I said $100, but then I was like, $100's not enough money, and then it was too late, and then so it's $100,000, okay.
That's so much fish.
And there's a reason Darwin said no.
Is it because it's endangered? That's why it's so expensive. Yeah.
So they're getting a launch ready so they can go to the secret mining shaft. And Krieg is like all ready to go with them, and Bridger's like, like, I told you Ford's gonna use like security dudes. And Krieg's like, no, Captain, like, I gotta go. You gotta understand. I'm the reason Katie's there.
If anything happened and I wasn't there, oh. And the captain thinks to himself, well, if some sort of Australian cowboy did shoot Krieg, things around here get pretty predictable. Nice and easy living. What's the worst thing that could happen?
What's the worst that can happen? So over in the mine, Cobbs is going to his trailer, and Hitchcock's like, okay, this is my chance to distract this man so, like, they can go get to the shuttle.
And you can tell it's a really good distraction because the saxophone begins to play in the score.
Yes, and she has on a different dress.
We have on a very hat.
We have on a very 90s long dress with a velvet choker with a... Mm-hmm. It's like one of those silhouette pendants.
Yes, an icon.
Wrong term.
Yeah, that's if it's a saint.
Yeah, no, like the silhouette, like the Victorian silhouette type thing.
Yes, yes.
They stole this outfit from like Christina Ricci.
It's important to lose the hat if you're going in seduction mode, because for all of his other crimes, Cobb is not aroused by Blossom.
I will say that hat made her look like a child. So as she is, hitting on him, the Sutters are not at all suspiciously going into the mine.
they're just taking a family field trip into the mine shaft. They're gonna have a picnic.
Why?
Oh, we forgot the picnic basket. Oh, well.
What I also want to know is why only one of them has a hard hat.
They don't have child-size hard hats. This kid needs to be in school. Like... Even if, all right, it's 5 years ago, none of the bad things have happened. Your plan is to put your 3-year-old in a cave for 5 years?
Yes.
This kid doesn't know how to read. This kid does not know who George Washington is. What is wrong with you people?
Kid knows how to read. He wrote in crayon.
Okay, yes. And his dad played George Washington. Are you going to poke a hole in everything I say?
Yes.
I saw it coming. I set myself up. I bump, set, and spike myself.
So the shuttle also gets to Shaft 7, and they set out. And Hitchcock is drinking away with Cobbs. And she's like, oh, I'll be right back. I have to go to the bathroom. And he is like, no, you're not going to pee. You know what you're going to do? You're going to sing for me. And she's like, oh, well... I need to pee. And he's like, no, you're not getting away without singing for me. Sing for me now.
My angel of music.
And I'm like, dude, she needed to pee. Let her pee first. Do you realize people get nerves? She's going to like pee herself up there.
You never sing your best when you're doing the potty dance. You got, just give her a minute, please.
So she goes up on stage and talks to the piano player. And the futuristic guitar players.
Oh.
The guitars are so ugly. They're awful.
I mean, the bass is a very normal bass.
Yeah.
But the guitar is, I guess, like abstract dolphin shaped. It's like a aqua colored kidney bean.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's a hideous guitar.
It's bad. It's not good.
So she begins to sing.
Yes.
She begins to sing this lounge number, and as this is going, she's loosening up, she's strutting her stuff, she comes down to the audience and is cozying up to some of the fellas. She clearly works for tips. But the thing is, this episode is conceptually, right, the big Hitchcock showcase. Mm-hmm. Katie Hitchcock. One of the least served members of the first 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't even get a really fun character moment in Sea West. It's just like eavesdropping on O'Neill and Ortiz's conversation is her thing in Bad Water.
Yeah, okay, you said in Sea West, which is what really threw me.
Yeah, in Bad Water, I mean.
Okay, yeah.
But finally, it's her turn. And this is the big central part of her big episode. And what happens?
She sings and she flirts.
And we are constantly chopping this scene up into pieces to go to the infiltration team in the tunnels. She isn't really allowed to build a narrative. You don't really follow the song all that well. It's chopped to bits.
Yeah, because we're checking in on, like, the Sutters waiting, you know, for Ford and them. We're seeing Ford and Crocker running through the tunnels, and, like, Crocker's tying up miners, and, like...
Very stealthy. Those guys surely won't talk about this later, or give full descriptions of all of you.
It's fine, as long as they're off the mine.
True.
So, Ford and them get to the Sutters, and they're like, okay, great, let's get you back to the shuttle. Wait, where's Katie? Where's Hitchcock? Where is she? Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wrapping up her song, going around all these miners in the bar, and I wonder how many of them are played by, like, the electrical department, the sound guys, the grips.
Yeah. So, Krieg is like, we gotta get her. So Krieg goes to get her, where, like, Ford stays in the mine in case she somehow makes her way back.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, I don't understand how, like, the point of that, because also you guys don't have a way to, like, radio each other to be like, oh, she's back, Krieg, head back. Like, Krieg will then be lost.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess maybe that's Ford's plan all along, is like, leave Krieg behind.
Yes.
No, I like him.
We gotta hose out that room.
So Krieg goes to the bar, and he sees the end of her performance, and as she's, you know, skirting around and, like, flirting with Cobb, she sees Krieg out of the corner of her eye, and, like, slowly makes her way through the audience over to him as the song's ending, which is kind of dumb, because when the song ends, and she's, like, flirting against Krieg, Cobb's like, I recognize this man! And so they have to take off running.
This is why we listen to the captain. He knows what he's talking about.
They get to Ford, and they're like, we gotta go. It's not a clean getaway. And Ford's like, okay, you guys go ahead. Like, let me make sure they can't get through here. And he's like, I'm gonna close this, like, really rickety wood door. Uh-huh. And I'm gonna push this mine cart in front of it and dump the contents, which I'm like, okay, once you dump the contents, maybe that will actually do something. Okay.
Sure.
So I was like, you are putting a cart with wheels in front of a really light door. I'm not sure this is going to work. But yes, dump the gold. That's fine.
They'll have unsecure footing as they break through this rickety cardboard door.
And as Ford turns to run in the same direction they went just like a 30 seconds ago, Cobb is suddenly there, like, I know these mine shafts better than anyone. And I'm like, how did you not see them? They literally just went there.
So Hitchcock and Krieg make it, and they're about to launch, and they're like, oh, but where's Ford? But they gotta go anyway, because Ford gets captured.
Well, and they find out he's captured because Cobb radios to them on Ford's radio, and Hitchcock answers, and it's all like, oh, okay, like, you know, bring the Sutters back kind of thing. Or, like, or your commander's gonna get it. And he's like, you know, let's see if he can sing. And they, like, punch him so he screams out and it's over the radio. And they're all like, oh, no. But
if you ask Commander Ford to sing, he'll just do marching rhymes from Basic, but not the dirty ones.
He doesn't do the dirty ones.
It's just like, I don't know, but I've been told the captain deserves my utmost respect. That is his marching rhyme.
You're so mean to Ford.
It's out of love. It's absolutely out of love.
You're so mean to him. Ford, through his pain of being punched, yells out for them to leave, and that it's an order, and they gotta follow it.
So they do. And on the other side of the commercial break, Bridger is hashing things out with the Mist Man.
Yes,
his robot professor friend.
Yes, about how, you know, it's basically the Sutters or Ford, and the captain pauses in a reply, and Steam Man's all like, you know, that was exceeded a comfortable response time. And he's like, that's because I'm not comfortable. I'm angry.
And so begins the Socratic strategy meeting as the professor just keeps repeating things back to him and asking, so why is that?
Why does the town have the power? Why do they give this man the power?
Yeah. And this... last leading question makes the idea bulb go off over Bridger's head.
Dun, dun, dun.
More on that later.
Yeah. Back on a shuttle, heading back over there. We got Bridger. We got Hitchcock. We got Krieg. We got Crocker. We got Lenny. Mm-hmm, Lenny is going mm-hmm. with us. And he's very stressed about Ford. And Ford, like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, protecting them. And now he's in this way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
Hitchcock did a lot more for him than Ford ever did to this point.
Yeah, but Ford could die right now.
Sure, sure.
Ford might already be dead for all they know. Once they get there and they're docking, mm-hmm. Bridger's like, no, we're not taking any guns. Weapons will not do us any good. I'm like, that's dumb.
You're the military!
And so Crocker and Lenny just set their guns down on the bench and, like, leave them there.
Now, you might think, what a foolish thing to do. Someone could come and find those guns. And you know what? It's worse than you thought.
Because once they're off the shuttle, Lenny's son, Gibby, we've never said his name, Gibby, I don't know why his name is fucking Gibby, Gibby pops out of the place that the dog was and is like, huh, guns.
This is about to be a very special episode of Sequence.
Cobb meets them in the town with a whole bunch of other people around, and
it's a prisoner exchange, classic yes, prisoner exchange.
Yes, you know, and you know, like, we're not gonna do anything till you give us Ford, and we want to see him. And so they throw him down on the ground, and he's very beat up.
Mm-hmm. He's got a cut over his eye, bleeding down into his face.
And,
yeah.
And Cobb's like, "Well, we want Lenny." And Bridger's like, "Well, then what? What's gonna happen after you have him?"
And like, one of his goons just cracks like, "Oh, then we sell all the gold and we're fucking rich."
And Bridger's like, "Yeah, that ain't gonna happen because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I used my UEO powers to call the people who buy your gold, and they like us too much, so they're not gonna buy gold from you anymore."
So yeah, the trade agreements that came with the UEO, ending the uncertainty of the jockeying for position Confederation era, mm-hmm. has been so very good for business that they'll be like, oh, that particular place sucks and the UEO hates them. All right, we'll buy gold from the other claims. That's no skin off our nose.
Yeah. And while they're having this conversation, Gibby sneaks in through an air duct and is like, "Hey, Ford, here's a gun."
Giving the moron child a gun, a loaded gun, goes so much better than it could have.
It goes so much better than it could have. And Ford's like, "Oh, okay, I'll take that gun." From my place on the floor next to the wall.
That Gibby is just crawling through, like, access ducts. He's underneath some sort of vat of something.
Yeah.
So the adults in the room are talking about how you can't do that. That's despotism. What happened to free trade? And he's like, it's just a boycott. Nothing wrong with a boycott.
Yeah. And so Cobb goes to, shoot the captain.
Yeah.
But before he can do that, Ford shoots, like, right past his head and is like, "I wasn't aiming this time, but I will next time."
Only on TV do you see a situation where there's a group of people who really want to open fire on another group of people, and then they hear gunshots coming at them and stop.
Yes. It's really not how that works.
Ford's warning shots should have set off some dominoes that led to the death of half the cast of Sequest.
Everyone would be dead.
It is now Hitchcock's command. She is in charge of Sequest DSP.
I think Lucas is, like, or O'Neill, because everyone that's present just died. And so what happens? Cobb takes off running.
Yeah.
He's like, oh shit, there's gunfire, gotta run. And Lenny also knows the mine shafts, but yeah. says, like, hey, I know them better, and so cuts him off very quickly.
There's an implication here that, you know, Cobb has been, since the takeover, happy to just hang out at the bar. I mean, he gets lunch there every day.
Yeah.
While,
well, it's the only place to eat.
While Lenny is still out there in his claim, digging his gold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a real man.
And so Cobb's like, you won, Lenny. I just want out of here. And he's like, no, you put my family through hell. And so then they fight. And there's lots of punching and grappling. And Cobb's like, picks up a rock and plays dirty and smashes it into Lenny's head.
This is another moment in the episode where it really feels like it's scripted for Lenny to be this downtrodden underdog who couldn't possibly stand up to the hulking brute bully of Cobb. But they cast this huge hunk of an action man.
He's so much bigger than Cobb. So when they are fighting, it's just not like...
Yeah, you're going to kick his... There's no tension here.
Yeah, when there's not a gun held to his family's head, it's like you are going to pummel this man to death.
Yeah. And if they cast, like, I don't know, the 1993 equivalent of DJ Qualls or something, some reedy little shrimp who just
Ben
like...
Benoit Shaw.
This would be so much better.
The Benoit Shaw would play dirty. It's a wiry little man that would, like, fuck you up. You wouldn't know it's coming. I believe in him. What?
Benoit Shaw plays dirty.
No, he would. It's wiry. He's going to get you. Take you by surprise.
But instead they have 1993 television's Michael Fassbender, you know, like...
But bulkier.
Right?
It's like Channing Tatum. Like, this is he's a very bulky man. Like,
yeah, if Channing Tatum was like... A dad that did a lot of woodworking in the garage. That is the look of this man.
This man looks like he chops a lot of wood.
Then again...
He pickaxes a lot of rocks. It makes sense.
It's the same motion. It's the same muscle groups.
They're very big arms.
Channing Tatum does build furniture in the beginning of... They show him actually doing it.
Yeah, in Magic Mike 2.
In Magic Mike 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's more welding than woodworking, but the idea is the same.
It's the same. It's the same.
Then he does a dance.
Yeah.
Just for himself, you know? It's about the love.
You know,
at that
sometimes
point,
you
when
just
he dances
need,
alone.
You need to enjoy your art.
Yeah.
You need to enjoy your time. You need to enjoy thrusting the floor for yourself.
I think we enjoy the Magic Mike movies so much more than anyone in the world who has not seen Magic Mike 3.
Yes. Yes.
Sometimes loving a film franchise is knowing when to tap out, mm-hmm. when to just leave some unwatched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Cobbs, after hitting Lenny with a rock in the head, decides to pick up a pitchfork and goes to, you know, pummel his brains in, but Bridger's there and like grabs a hold of it and is like, that's it, it's all over. Mm-hmm. And Cobb looks over at Ford and Crocker, who both flash their guns at him.
Yeah, they just like, they both like lift a piece up into frame and then set it back down. It's like, it's a gag. It is a gag. And you might think, ah, now is when the lawyers come and we're going to take Cobb away. No. What Bridger does is send him right back into a fair fist fight and let this play out.
And so they pummel each other more, and Lenny's like pounding into Cobb's, but then he looks up at his son, Gibby, who's crying, weeping, and he's like, no, I will rise above this.
I will not murder this man in front of my weeping son.
So I'm going to get up, and I'm going to say no more, and I'm going to let Ford and Crocker arrest you.
Which they could have done 30 seconds earlier.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do this.
So then Gibby goes up to his father and is like, Father, here's your hard hat. Let's have the most awkward hug. Let's do the really, really bad TV hug that I absolutely can't stand when they're like, okay, child, when you hug this man, you're going to both face the camera.
Mm-hmm. And then pat his back three times.
I fucking hate when they do that. Like, no one hugs cheek to cheek facing out. Just let one of their faces not be seen during the damn hug. Fucking hate it.
It's a great opportunity to hide your child actor away.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Let it happen. Whoever cannot cry well, hide them.
Yes.
So stupid. They used to do that so often in, like, stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because they're like, we must see your face. No, no, we don't need to see your face. We know what's happening.
So back on Sequest, Banjo!
Banjo!
Banjo and Darwin are playing catch with a big inflatable ball.
It's the best!
And it's the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
I just could watch that on a loop.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you kind of do. I think they recycle a few shots to make it work.
But Lucas is like, hey, Gibby, like, this is Darwin. He can talk. And he's like, no, he can't. Yes, he can. No, he can't. Yes, he can. No, he can't. Yes, he can. And punch, 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 punch. And like, Darwin, talk! And the kid's like, what the fuck?
We gotta teach this machine to translate Banjo, too. I wanna know what that little guy's thinking.
Banjo?
I wanna talk to Banjo!
Do you think Banjo would have a computer Australian accent? Throw it out there.
Maybe, maybe.
Then, like, Bridger and all of them come in with Gibby's parents.
Wearing their complimentary jumpsuits, because you know they just got the tour.
Yes, right?
Everybody, just got the tour. You get a jumpsuit, you get a tour. That's how it goes.
Yes. And they're like, oh man, Gibby's not going to want to go home after this. And so they all say their goodbyes, and they're like, hey, Gibby, it's time to leave. And he's like, aw, but Darwin was just gonna, like, tell me how he holds his breath for so long. And Lenny's like, aw, kids, what an imagination.
Dude, if you got here 15 seconds earlier, dude.
And that is the end of this episode.
That's
the end of the episode.
That's the final shot is one more, like, hero shot undersea of the hardware. You know, the Sequest going on to another adventure while one of the launches and a couple of the whiskers buzz around. Always activity, always tools to bring to bear. That Sequest, baby.
And then we gotta have our Bob fact.
Bob fact.
Which is not actually a fact.
It's Bob advocacy this week?
Bob advocacy about how, you know, the ocean is filled with minerals, and before we mine, we gotta, like, put great care into protecting the ocean, and we have, you know, the challenge of our generation is to protect it. And he talks so damn fast through his, like, little 20 seconds
he's trying to get it all in. He's got a lot to say. That teleprompter is going triple time. He's got a lot. Yeah, about overcoming self-interest with reason to preserve an ocean we can all enjoy. Yes.
Yeah. So, darling, do you have a Bob fact?
I have a Bob fact that is also about deep sea mining, but, you know, the facts of it.
Okay.
Deep sea mining, when and if it happens, will not be the deep mine shafts like the gold rush that inspired Sea West. It will be sending robots down to scoop up these little guys called polymetallic nodules.
Oh.
These are little rock potatoes made of valuable metals that lie in vast fields of seabed all around the world. There is currently a whole grifting industry of people right now saying we're just on the edge of a viable, profitable way to go down and get them, and all it takes is your investment on the ground floor.
We got an MLM going on for deep sea mining. You can also work from home. Ladies, you can be a girl boss too.
Well, more like, hello billionaire, your $20 million in my ocean robot thing
can also make you a girl boss.
Yeah. That's where deep sea mining is right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, darling, what is your Bob fact?
Okay. So I Googled lounge singing underwater. And you know what I got?
Not much.
Google suggested an article from 2020 about penguins. And what I learned...
Is it a review of Happy Feet? What is this?
What I learned is that in 2020... it was confirmed that penguins make noise underwater.
Yeah! Have they not been to a zoo?
Apparently, it was always, like, assumed, but not, like, studied or something.
Sure, okay.
Like it wasn't...
This was an article. It was an article I read. I was very surprised. This, like, was not known before this. It was weird. But this article talks about how these researchers had cameras on these penguins to, like, watch their diving formations and, like, stuff. And through these videos is when they actually, like, had observations of penguins communicating underwater.
Now, where does the lounge part come in?
I don't know! I don't know why Google gave me this! But under... lounge singing underwater got me penguins talking underwater, only being confirmed 4 years ago.
All right. Hey, Lucas, put some penguinese in your dang machine. Let's go!
I was like, how did we not know this already? I didn't know this was a thing we didn't know? But Charlie, what's your opinion of Sea West now that you've rewatched it?
It's not great. Really not great. It is just a mess of missed opportunities. Like, I don't care about the struggle between our two main guest actors. I think this episode, in its quest to put Hitchcock in the center, moves her away from the established goals and thoughts and actions of Katie Hitchcock.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually serve that goal at all. The action is bad. Like, there's nothing about it that's good. Like,
no.
Give Me Liberté is also not a great episode, but it has a few things, you know?
It has more moments.
This is that tier of episode without those moments.
Yeah.
Without Udo Kier's weird hollow straw man.
I still stand by this is an episode I will not rewatch in my rewatches. It's just so boring.
Like,
it was much more fun to talk about. The most fun I've ever had with this episode is talking about it today. Does not make me want to watch it again.
Like, we have to ask the question, are Sackmar and Leonard the bad ones? When we see that credit come up, do we think, oh man.
No, I loved Treasures of the Tonga Trench.
But that one is so elevated by the actors, by the performance.
I mean, yes.
And that is something that it has in spades, and Liberté has in, I don't know, what's the second or third best suit? Diamonds? And Sea West just doesn't have.
No. And it sucks, too, because, like, you finally get, like, a Hitchcock-focused one, and it just sucks. It would have been so much better, like, if they wanted to do this whole, like, let us see a different side of Hitchcock type thing, fine, whatever. But have her be the one having to actually get them out. Have her being the one having to fight her way out to save them.
Yes.
Punch people. Pull guns on people.
Why wasn't she in Ford's place?
Yeah.
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 And if you're going to do a Western, why is the only element you're bringing, like, disputed claim to land and hats? Like, no one rustles up a posse. No one does the fun stuff of a Western.
There's a banjo.
There is. There is a rough and tumble bar where people get punched. Like, I guess, but I don't know.
It's not good.
Like, the thing about a Western for me is very quiet, desperate men, which is not the case here. And it's the West. It's the frontier. It's the photography of it. And they're in caves. That's just not an option in your submarine show.
No, it's not. You guys don't need to go watch this one. I know I've been like, oh, if you're going to watch any part of it, don't go watch this one. It's not worth it.
Turn it off after the beep beep. The beep beep is the best.
The little car. I love the little car.
Then you skip to the Animals Playing Catch.
Animals Playing Catch.
Yes, it's just the bookends. That's
maybe it. Like 2 seconds to see her outfit. But like, yeah.
You'll see it in passing as you fast forward. Yeah, that's true. Like, oh, there's the hat. All right. Yeah.
I needed more banjo, honestly.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen some, like, one more scene of, like, Lucas having to take care of Banjo and, like, I don't know, maybe trying to track him down and then finding out that, like, he ran to see Darwin. Would have been very cute.
Brighter times are ahead. Our very next episode, actually our next two episodes, big guest stars I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
And our next one, wouldn't you know it, emotional Lucas time.
Emotional Lucas. I like the next one a lot. Next one's really good.
So yeah, next time we're talking about the very next episode to air. It is called Photon Bullet.
I love Photon Bullet.
It has emotional Lucas time.
Yeah.
But before we let you go, I want to tell people to check out something I was just on.
Yeah, well, I want to tell people to check out something too.
Okay, do it.
You guys should check out Throwback Bound, my other podcast. We are talking about Spellbinder. It also takes place in Australia.
But like real Australia.
Like real Australia.
With real Australians.
Yeah.
They call people skags.
There's a lot of terminology we have to Google.
There's a lot of spunk.
A lot of spunk.
They're very spunky. But
just so check that out.
But I want to send everybody to the latest, at time of recording, episode of the Extra Credit Podcast, number 203, titled $350,000 in Penalties.
That's a lot of penalties.
They asked me on to read selections from a Usenet group that was founded for people to talk about werewolf films.
Ooh.
And taken over by people who believe they are werewolves.
Oh my god!
Who then instituted a lot of rules and FAQs to make sure that that never happened again. And it would only belong to the people who believe they are werewolves.
Oh my god.
So that was a lot of fun reading from that FAQ and those rules.
Goodness, check that out. That sounds amazing. You should also, you know, go follow us on our new Blue Sky account.
Yes, wskrs.bisky.social is the handle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, you know, go leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. Maybe subscribe, all that type of stuff.
You know who recently left us a 5-star rating and wrote a review on Apple Podcasts?
Who?
I want to read a review from Slade 1973.
Mm.
The glam rock band is listening to us?
Maybe.
And they say, thank you, Elena and Grant. I love you guys.
Aww.
Sequest always reminds me of a particular time in my life, which is when the show premiered. I watched the first half of season one when it aired before my social life picked up, then caught season three after my social life tanked. Aww. I've still never seen much of the second season, but I love the first and third.
Most people do. It's fine.
So glad you guys decided to make this podcast, and I'm looking forward to hearing about each episode with you. Now, there are some listeners who've been following along and are already so tantalized, like, what is Grant talking about when he dare not speak of season two? What is happening in season two to cause this reaction? And I'm not trying to feed that. I'm not trying to make a gag out of it. But, like, even in the reviews, you're serving it up to me. I can't help it.
So, yeah, leave us a review like that. You can also tell your friends.
Please tell your friends. I know they're out there because season two isn't airing. Everyone's social lives are great now.
And go remind people they don't need to watch the show to listen to us.
Sometimes we recommend you don't.
Like this time. This is a great time to not watch it.
First 3 minutes, last 3 minutes. There's cute animals.
It's all you need. All you need.
Beep, beep.
Banjo should have ridden in the little car.
Oh my gosh, why didn't Banjo go in the beep beep?
I need him in the beep beep. And then the little boop boop of his little snoot snoot.
That's the song that Hitchcock should have sang.
Yeah, the beep beep and the boop boop with the snoot snoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I sing on that episode of Extra Credit while we're talking about singing.
Oh yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, you do?
Yes.
Oh, what do you sing?
You'll have to listen and find out.
Oh, okay.
But with that,
I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.